Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings. Hastan anila nijone go shabothya, nijone go shabothya. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kiddushi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Hey! music from the drum Blackstone off the Kenyon Record CD entitled On the Oregon Trail. The name of that powwow song was The New Era. I featured that tune as a way of saying that now, in the new millennium, especially due to climate change and many other serious anthropogenic impacts we inflict upon our biosphere, humanity finds itself in a new era, where the choices we make now on how we treat Mother Earth and each other will determine the survival and well-being of all life now and in the future of our planet. Ashkwe, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kadishi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Today's broadcast is Program 7 of Wolf Mountain Radio's series on climate change and energy justice. This program shares conversation with participants from the 2009 Florida Statewide PowerShift Conference. My first guest you'll hear is Miss Dana Lazarus, a student at New College of Florida in Sarasota. PowerShift is a national campaign of more than 300,000 young people across the country who are calling for bold, serious action on climate change and energy justice issues. Yad Kadishi Native Center endorses this campaign. Global climate change and energy issues have long been major concerns of Yad Kadishi Native Center. An important priority of mine has been encouraging and mentoring young people to think globally and act locally on many serious planetary justice issues. This is why Yad Kadishi Native Center networks with many organizations, campaigns, and protests such as PowerShift. I felt honored to be invited to speak at Florida PowerShift 09. It was a privilege to meet many fine youth activists concerned about global climate change and energy justice. Yad Kadishi Native Center, like many indigenous peoples throughout the world, have long been speaking out about the many serious problems impacting Mother Earth and the well-being of all life. Humanity is living during a critical time in our planet's history. This is why our Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices programs focus on many important global issues that need serious attention. As most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, Indigenous peoples have tried for many years to warn the international community about many serious ecological issues, especially global climate change and abusive energy development. Exploitation of energy resources have greatly impacted Native peoples throughout the globe. The history of colonization and now globalization has been fueled from the greed of energy development. Indigenous peoples have made numerous declarations about climate change at various international forums, such as the United Nations and to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC. A Native woman, Sheila Watt Cloutier, former chairperson of the Inuit Circumpolar Council, an international organization of Indigenous peoples of the Arctic, shared the 2007 Nobel Peace Prize with former U.S. Vice President Al Gore for their work on global climate issues. In 1998, as a journalist, I attended a national climate conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico, hosted by NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. This NASA summit was special and historic in that many Native peoples were invited to present testimony. The Albuquerque Declaration and Native Peoples, Native Homelands Climate Change Report entitled Circle of Wisdom is still a very important reference. There have been many other international declarations of Indigenous peoples on climate, such as the Carioca Statement at the UN Conference on Environment and Development, in Quito, Ecuador, in Lyon, France, in The Hague, Netherlands, in Milan, Italy, in Kyoto, Japan, in Bonn, Germany, in Nakuru, Kenya, Africa, at the Indigenous Nationalities of the Amazon, and the April 2009 Indigenous Peoples Global Summit on Climate Change in Anchorage, Alaska. These are all important examples. Unfortunately, the wisdoms and knowledge of Indigenous peoples about climate change is a voice that is still not respected enough by governments, industry, and the world citizenry that seems to ignore anthropogenic global climate impacts. Power Shift is a project of the Energy Action Coalition, EAC, was founded in June 2004 to unite a diversity of organizations in an alliance that supports and strengthens the student and youth clean, just, and renewable energy movement. Power Shift is known for mobilizing thousands of students and youth to rally in Washington, D.C., to pressure the White House and Congress for a strong and comprehensive climate and energy plan. Power Shift's goal is for U.S. energy policy that creates a renewable energy economy with millions of new green jobs, ends dependence on dirty, polluting energy, brings America security, protects the environment, and reduces harmful global climate change pollution. The work of the Energy Action Coalition is so timely in view of the upcoming Global Climate Conference in Copenhagen, Denmark. Unfortunately, many nations, after important international conferences, do not fulfill their pledges or honor agreements made. In view of this, people must continue their climate and energy justice activism beyond Copenhagen. Yad Kadishi Native Center urges our listeners to become active in climate, energy, and environmental issues. Consider joining Power Shift. Sign their petition against dirty tricks by the fossil fuel and nuclear power energy companies and their lobbyists. Urge President Obama and members of Congress to create safe, clean, renewable energy and climate policy. Participate in regional conferences, statewide symposiums, and local events in support of energy, environment, and climate justice actions. There are many fine organizations like EAC that will welcome your involvement. Remember, think globally and act locally. In 2006, I participated in a Florida statewide meeting of college students guided by EAC's Campus Climate Challenge to encourage universities to invest in renewable energy. Florida Gulf Coast University, where I am a lecturer and curriculum advisor, has signed the American College and University President's Climate Commitment. FGCU is also constructing a 2-megawatt solar energy project on campus, which will reduce FGCU's use of polluting fossil fuel energy. I generally support this alternative energy project. However, the 16-acre solar field has generated much controversy that you heard about in Program 1 of this Climate Change and Energy Justice interview series. Institutions of higher education must show leadership on energy and climate issues. Greening of college campuses by reducing, reusing, and recycling should become a priority. It should be standard practice for colleges to conserve more energy and utilize safe, clean, and renewable energy technologies. Reducing a school's ecological footprint will save money. It also will be an example to society of how communities can create a healthier and sustainable future. An example of this is USGBC LEED Certified Energy and Environment Design Buildings. A good example is Florida Gulf Coast University's Demonstration and Learning Center's Green Building Project that is nearing construction. Green Building incorporates a number of important key concepts in design, construction, and maintenance. These include energy efficiency, passive design, recycled and renewable building materials, water usage, waste management, healthy indoor environment, and landscaping that protects and restores the site by planting native vegetation, which can be habitat for wildlife. The green building will showcase sustainable building standards and practices. Importantly, it will serve as a training center for engineering students and the construction industry. Universities as centers of education and research must also promote energy and environmental sustainability by their academic mission. Curriculums must include critical energy and climate issues. Courses must be interdisciplinary so that students learn about the serious global problems we are now faced with. Florida Gulf Coast University's Center for Environment and Sustainability Education, where I serve as a member of the center's Board of Advisors, pedagogy is focused on ecological literacy and planetary citizenship for a sustainable and peaceful future through scholarship, education, and action. FGCU's 9 student goals and outcomes and the promotion of the International Earth Charter exemplify the type of education needed for the 21st century. As I welcome my guest to Wolf Mountain Radio, I wish to read a statement from the Earth Charter, which I think exemplifies a philosophy those of us in PowerShift believe in. Quote, "In the midst of a magnificent diversity of cultures and life forms, we are one human family in one Earth community with a common destiny. We must join together to bring forth a sustainable global society founded on respect for nature, universal human rights, economic justice, and a culture of peace." Unquote. As I welcome my guest to Wolf Mountain Radio, I wish to read a statement from the Earth Charter, which I think exemplifies a philosophy those of us in PowerShift believe in. Quote, "In the midst of a magnificent diversity of cultures and life forms, we are one human family in one Earth community with a common destiny. We must join together to bring forth a sustainable global society founded on respect for nature, universal human rights, economic justice, and a culture of peace." Unquote. My first guest, Dana Lazarus, attends New College of Florida. It is a fine liberal arts school in Sarasota that specializes in student-centered learning through collaborative curriculum development and independent research. Students at New College host an annual forum entitled All Power to the Imagination Conference. It brings together community organizers, activists, and academics for a weekend of networking, discussion, and learning on a variety of important issues. Last year, I had the privilege to speak at the All Power Conference on an Indigenous perspective of environmental and social justice. In 2010, I've been invited to speak again at All Power to the Imagination Conference on the subject climate and energy justice. This is the focus of today's radio interview. It is now my pleasure to welcome Dana Lazarus to Wolf Mountain Radio.
Hello, my name is Dana Lazarus, and I'm here from New College of Florida in Sarasota. We brought 10 people here, and that's a little over 1% of our whole school. There's only 800 students at my school, and we got a pretty good turnout, I would say. As for the conference itself, I thought there was going to be between like 500 and 1,000 people. I know that the people that put it on worked their asses off to put this on, and it's a really important event, and I'm really, really glad that they did it. So far, it's been really fun. The workshops have been really, really informative.
Dana, I want to ask you, what personally motivated you to become concerned about the environment and environmental justice? Is it from your college studies? Did it stem from your childhood? Certainly, my university education in ecology, along with witnessing so many environmental injustices, environmental racism as a person of color, as a Native American, is why I became a biologist and earth justice activist. One example, recently I spoke at a Moat Marine Laboratory symposium, which is located in Sarasota, not far from your college. The focus of my presentation was the need for scientists to become much more public and outspoken about protecting the environment from harmful energy development. Since Moat Laboratory is an oceanographic center, I talked about the threat of offshore oil and gas development that many business leaders and politicians are once again advocating for the coast of Florida. I want to share with you an essay I was asked to write along with other authors for a journal that will soon be presented to legislators. My article is entitled A Voice in Defense of the Gulf of Mexico, The Ethic of Gunawinima Nima Mainan Aki. Quote, the world we live in is at a critical time in our planet's history. A major reason for many serious problems confronting humanity is from anthropogenic causes. The use of fossil fuel energy resources is one of the most detrimental threats to our global climate. Continuing to exploit more oil sources, especially from our oceans, is a suicidal path. Many Floridians know this. This is why most of us Floridians are against offshore energy development. The Gulf of Mexico was once a very healthy marine ecosystem. Scientific research has documented the declining state of the Gulf's coastal and pelagic waters. Oil and gas development will only add further risk to the already suffering fisheries and tourism industries that are vital to Florida's economy. The very harmful ecological impacts from oil drilling is a concern most Floridians are unwilling to accept. Floridians know that using safe, clean, and renewable energy sources, such as conservation, solar, wind, geothermal, and ocean current technologies are the solutions for replacing the highly toxic fossil fuel and nuclear power sources that are so damaging to human health and the environment. Oceans are an integral part of our planet's biosphere. Their role and influence on global climate and regional weather systems are well known by the scientific community. Marine biochemistry is a delicate equation. Oil and gas exploration and production cause serious pollution. The degraded water chemistry results in killing of sea life. The poisoning of the marine food chain from oil and gas development begins during the energy exploration phase. Drilling rig test wells use voluminous amounts of highly toxic drilling fluids known as drilling muds. The purpose of the drilling muds are to keep the drill bit cool and lubricated. Toxic drill muds also provide hydrostatic pressure to prevent formation material from entering into the well bore. The serious issue about highly toxic drilling fluids is that they are just washed off the drilling platforms as effluent into the sea. Oil production rigs, likewise, use voluminous amounts of toxic drilling fluids, which are also washed off as waste effluent. It is also important to point out that oil exploration and production greatly pollutes the marine environment from oil waste and oil spills that occur during drilling. The poisoning of the marine food chain from oil and gas development is of little consequence to energy companies. In the rare occasions when they are caught in violation of environmental laws, they generally receive a punitive fine. They consider this the cost of doing business. One of the best examples of industry's public deception campaigns are their public relations advertisements that try to convince the public that their oil rigs provide a healthy habitat for marine life. The toxic effluent from the rigs are known to kill fish. Every Florida fisherman can verify this fact. For more than a millennia, ancient culture peoples of Florida, the Calusa, Tequesta, Timucua, Tocobagan, Apalachee, Tallahassee, and other smaller tribes lived in a harmonious relationship with the sea. Like contemporary indigenous peoples throughout the world, those ancient native cultures had a reverence for sea life, which provided much of their very subsistence. Like contemporary indigenous peoples, the ancient culture tribes had a deep cultural, spiritual relationship with the oceans. Anything that would threaten or harm the marine environment was unthinkable. It was a serious violation of tribal law. In my native Wabanaki culture, we express this principle in the phrase Ganawinia Nina Maninan Aki, meaning respect our Mother Earth. This concept seems no longer to exist, if it ever did, with those of the industrial society. The energy industry seems only to value money and profit. They care less about respecting our Mother Earth. My Nitchitunganooks, my ancestors, warned about a time in human history when greed would run rampant, disregarding the well-being of contemporary and future generations of all life. The raping of the planet for energy, as exemplified in the development of oil and gas in the Gulf of Mexico, is a tragic fulfillment of this ancient indigenous prophecy. It is not too late if all of us, who have reverence for Mother Earth, who have respect and concern for our oceans, fight against this insane, suicidal mentality to drill for oil in the Gulf of Mexico, unquote. Dana, please share with our worldwide listeners what motivated you to be an environmentalist.
Well, honestly, that's interesting you should ask, because I want to be an environmental justice major. Really, it's just because I feel this immense amount of empathy for all the people and even the plants and other species around the world. I feel like a lot of people and things can't fight for themselves, so I want to stand up for them because they don't have a voice. I think it just depends on people's values. I was raised in a really environmentally friendly, I suppose, home. My parents always took me camping and stuff. I'm infatuated with nature. I love it, and I just can't bear to see it go. Junhoane Gunyadalawanyane Godinyagele Junhoane.
Go on making waves. sing your song through the water.
Oneida singer-songwriter Joanne Shenandoah off her Silver Ray Records CD entitled Sky Woman. The name of that beautiful song is Whales of the Sea. Many cetaceans are nearing extinction due to commercial whaling, pollution of the oceans, and even global climate change that impacts their water world. Whales are a barometer of human beings' disrespect of Mother Earth and all of our relations. As we say in my native language, Kinon-Wontakwisin, the animals, plants, birds, trees, soil, fish, and marine life. My guest on Wolf Mountain Radio is New College of Florida student and environmentalist Dana Lazarus. Our conversation took place at the Florida PowerShift 2009 conference. PowerShift, as mentioned in today's program introduction, is in an alliance of more than 300,000 youth across America who care about climate change and energy justice. It gives me hope for the future when I see the enthusiasm of young people like yourself and other PowerShift activists. My question to you, Dana, are you optimistic about the future? Do you feel enough people of your youth generation are working for a better world?
For the most part, I'm optimistic because I have to be. I'm definitely pessimistic that people won't be able to unite, and I think that's the most important thing about this because there's so many people, like the population has grown so much. But I'm still optimistic because I have to be. If I'm not, then there's really no point for me to even go to school and fight for what I'm fighting for. I think we can do it because I think I can do it. I'm doing what I'm doing. The fact that I can be active kind of shows me that other people can be active too, and it's just a matter of figuring out how to get them to care and be active.
Dana, PowerShift calls for a sustainable energy future which does not harm our environment, like the current carbon-based fossil fuels and radiation from nuclear power. How do you answer people's questions about what can replace oil, coal, oil shale, natural gas, and nuclear energy?
Well, it's crazy because we have the technology to switch over to a completely sustainable system right now. It's all in the politics and just the desires of the people. There's just so many alternatives. There's solar, especially. That's free energy for everybody. And wind energy, water energy. There's so many ways to create energy. I understand the power of oil. It's got billions of years of sun energy trapped inside of it, and it makes a lot of sense, but it's not making sense anymore, I would say, as far as sustainability.
Earlier in today's program, I referred to my native expression, Gana Winema Nima Menan Aki, which means reverence and respect of our Mother Earth. This indigenous belief does not exist in industrial society. If it did, many of the serious injustices and issues threatening our planet, like global climate change, poverty, world hunger, species extinction, deforestation, overfishing, and pollution of our biosphere, would not exist. How can we instill this indigenous philosophy, a paradigm shift, so that there is a change in how humanity treats the planet and each other?
That's a really hard question. Education. It's all about education. and the values that our government are going to basically fund. It's just a matter, I think, of who gets to be in those high offices. And I'm hoping that somebody with good values will get into high office, somebody with empathy.
Throughout the Wolf Mountain Radio Powershift interviews, I have highlighted how global climate change and energy development are environmental social justice issues that greatly impact poor and people of color communities throughout the world. What gives me encouragement to fight against this injustice is people around the globe, especially young people like Powershift, protesting this exploitative colonial power structure that is raping and poisoning Mother Earth. One important expression of this is the preamble and the 17 principles of environmental justice from the historic 1991 First National People of Color Environmental Leadership Summit that I had the honor to be a delegate to. I will now read the preamble of the principles of environmental justice. Quote, "We, the people of color, gathered together at this multinational People of Color Environmental Leadership Summit to begin to build a national and international movement of all peoples of color to fight the destruction and taking of our lands and communities, do hereby reestablish our spiritual interdependence to the sacredness of our Mother Earth, to respect and celebrate each of our cultures, language, and beliefs about the natural world and our roles in healing ourselves, to ensure environmental justice, to promote economic alternatives which would contribute to the development of environmentally safe livelihoods, and to secure our political, economic, and cultural liberation that has been denied for over 500 years of colonization and oppression, resulting in the poisoning of our communities and land and the genocide of our peoples. Do affirm and adopt these principles of environmental justice," unquote. This growing Earth justice movement brings me to the subject of nonviolent direct action. Global climate change and destructive energy development must be considered a universal violation of human rights, a crime against humanity. Nonviolent civil disobedience and defense of the planet is something to be proud of. The global climate energy justice movement needs more nonviolent civil disobedience direct action if we are to stop this insane climate energy path we are threatened by. Dana, you previously mentioned that you are very interested in environmental justice. What are your views about nonviolent civil disobedience, what Mahatma Gandhi called Satyagraha, or exemplified by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and many other warriors I could talk about? Yad Kadishi Native Center is proud of our many years of nonviolent direct action in defense of the earth. Civil disobedience is one of the subjects I often speak about to young people.
I feel like nonviolent direct action is something everybody can do and not have to be afraid that they're going to be punished harshly. It's just a very effective way of getting your voice heard and demonstrating how you want things to go, how you want your world to be shaped around you. It's a wonderful thing. It's nonviolent. It's peaceful. It just makes a lot of sense, and I wish more people would go out and do some nonviolent direct action.
We are standing here together with a bunch of our friends, helping nuclear power come to an end. This movement is growing and it's getting mighty strong, 'cause we know we are right and this is our song.
Gonna write another page. We're marching up Seabrook. Gonna end this nuclear age. We are marching up Seabrook for our children and our homes. We're marching up the Seabrook. Won't you join and come along? They may keep us out today, oh, but we'll be back again. This movement's gonna grow till that plant comes to an end. They have mason clubs and doggies and big water pistols too. Our strength is in each other. You have me and I have you. We are marching up Seabrook, gonna write another page. We're marching up Seabrook, gonna end this nuclear age. We are marching up Seabrook for our children and our home. We're marching up to Seabrook, won't you join and come along? The press will have...
Come to the New England No Nukes, No Dumps Rally, April 12, 1986, Saturday, 11 to 5 p.m., rain or shine, at the Hampton Beach State Park, Route 1A, across the salt marsh from the Seabrook Nuclear Station in New Hampshire. Come April 12th to stand up for the health and safety of future generations, and join us as we gather at the Hampton Beach State Park, Hampton, New Hampshire, to send a clear message to the Department of Energy, to the state regulators, and the nuclear industry that New England will not be a national sacrifice area. We will not have nuclear power plants or nuclear waste dumps in New England. The April 12, 1986, Saturday, No Nukes, No Dumps Rally also marks the 10th anniversary of the first Seacoast Anti-Nuclear Rally. A thousand generations to come will be affected by our decision. So join us for the No Nukes, No Dumps Rally, April 12, 1986. And remember that Seabrook is also the site of a Penacook Indian burial site, a holy area to the indigenous peoples here. No Nukes, No Dumps Rally, Music and Speakers, April 12, 1986, Saturday, from 11 to 5 p.m. at Hampton Beach State Park, Route 1A, across the salt marsh from the Seabrook Nuclear Station.
Just on the news, but it's fine that people took a stand, got out of their easy chairs. Go buy a helmet and a mask, come up and join us there. We are marching up to Seabrook, gonna write another bay. We're marching up to Seabrook, gonna end this nuclear age. We are marching up to Seabrook for our children and our homes. We're marching up to Seabrook, won't you join and come along?
You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Atkinishe Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. What you just heard was a segment of the anti-nuclear song, We're Marching Up to Seabrook. I also featured a 1986 New England No Nukes, No Dumps protest rally announcement from my audio archives. I aired that public service announcement 23 years ago when Wolf Mountain Radio was broadcasting on WMFO-FM in Boston, Massachusetts. The anti-Seabrook nuclear plant battle and a proposed high-level nuclear waste dump on Penobscot tribal land were major fights many of us were a part of for many years through the establishment of the Clamshell Alliance. Clamshell was a fine example of Native American and non-Native allies working together trying to protect Sacred Mother Earth. Most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know that Clamshell's non-violent direct actions helped ignite a national anti-nuclear power movement. In 1977, for example, over 2,000 activists protested in Seabrook. Nearly 1,500 people were arrested for civil disobedience and jailed in New Hampshire National Guard armories. Sadly, Seabrook plant was built, but the high-level nuclear waste dump never was. I will now share with you a short essay I was asked to write for a Seabrook anniversary journal. I hope it reaches your heart. It is entitled, Quahog Alliance, A Native Thought. Quote, Quahog, the native Algonquin language term for the northern bivalve mollusk, commonly called a hard clam, who inhabits intertidal waters of what's now called the Atlantic coast of North America, is a marine clam that is honored by my indigenous peoples, who are now called American Indians. The quahog clam shell was not only a major source of food to seacoast tribal nations, but was also the material used to make our sacred wampum. Wampum is and was not just decoration for jewelry, and it was not money, as Europeans wrongly think. Wampum was in fact used to make treaty belts, which depicted native laws and codes of conduct of how to respect and care for each other and our natural world relatives, what in English is called nature, animals, birds, plants, soil, trees, fish, and marine life. Kinon Wontakwisin, all of our relations, as we say in my Wabanaki language. This is one of the most important teachings my Nichitanganooks, my ancestors, tried to express to the Wampiskatonk, the people from across the waters, in other words, the non-native settlers who came to our homelands from Europe. 356 years after the pilgrims washed ashore at Patuxet, Plymouth, the monster known as the Seabrook Nuclear Power Station threatened to poison and destroy a culturally and biologically special seacoast area that generations of Penacook and other tribal peoples inhabited, a place for fishing, clamming, a place for ceremonies. The formation of the Clamshell Alliance, to me, represents the spirit of the special Quahog marine relative. It was a time when many different people came together to protect a part of Mother Earth and our own human species from the insanity of nuclear power. This, too, had been and continues to be a special concern to us American Indians who are direct victims of the nuclear fuel cycle. Mining uranium on Indian lands, testing nuclear weapons on Indian lands, and trying to use Indian lands as nuclear dump way sites. I remember Clamshell's New England No Nukes, No Dumps rally accompanied Grandma Madras and Sammy from Indian Island, when the three of us spoke to our sisters and brother Clamshells about defending Mother Earth and fighting the proposed nuclear industry dump in our Wabanaki territory on Penobscot land, now called the state of Maine. The spirit of the Quahog, the clamshell, is needed now more than ever. The resurgence of nuclear power throughout the world requires people to come together again to defend Mother Earth and all life from her greedy political economic insanity of nuclear energy and nuclear weapons. The Quahog wampum reminds us to have reverence for all life, to live in a caring and peaceful manner with each other and all of our relations unto seven generations into the future. Kinon Wontakwisin, all of our relations. Unquote. That was an essay entitled Quahog Alliance, A Native Thought, by yours truly, Ones A. Pritzker. I want to thank today's program guest, Dana Lazarus, energy and environmental activist, for speaking with us here at Power Shift. I always like to ask my program guests if they have any final words for our Wolf Mountain radio listeners.
Yes, hello young people, I love you all. We can do this, you guys. We gotta just band together and keep a positive attitude, and we can totally turn this world around and make it how we want to, because that's what our parents did, that's what everyone before us has done, and we can do it too.
You are listening to Yatkidichi Native Centers, Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
Well, dear friends, we are nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. I wish to remind everyone of how important it is, however you can, and wherever you live, to be involved in working for a better world for all life. Our Mother Earth and humanity face an uncertain future if we don't protect the planet from serious global climate change. Power shift goes beyond the type of energy sources we use. Power shift also means a paradigm shift of how we humans treat the Earth and each other. This is the message I hope people appreciate from Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio. We shall conclude today's program with music from Lakota flutist Kevin Locke off his Mekoshe Music CD entitled The First Flute. The name of the song is Before the Gathering of Clouds. My ancestors, my Nichitanganooks, were always aware of changes in the sky, especially cloud patterns which warned of coming storms. Growing up, clan elders taught me to watch the sky for weather changes, especially when out hunting and fishing. Of course, animals, birds, and fish can sense weather changes. This is why we tribal people paid attention to our natural world relatives. Now in the new millennium, Indigenous peoples throughout the world have observed many changes in the environment which are the direct result of global climate change. This is why Native peoples have tried to warn about climate change from many Indigenous peoples' declarations over the years. Once again, Native peoples will present another statement at the upcoming United Nations Summit in Copenhagen, Denmark. We hope it will be heard. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Aho, Kinawan Talkwasin, to all of our relations.